This coming week marks the 75th anniversary of America's oldest continuously running radio program, The Grand Ole Opry. Lost and Found Sound has the story of WSM, the station where the Opry started. This story was inspired by a letter from listener Marshall Thayer of Kansas City. He wrote, "If it isn't already in your compilation of recorded sounds, I'd like to recommend a real gem. Every day at 5:08 p.m. from August 1933 to June of 45, listeners to WSM, the 50,000-watt Nashville radio station, would hear the live sound of the Louisville and Nashville Railroad's crack passenger train, the Pan American, as it passed their transmitter tower. Operation personnel bent over backwards to see that the Pan was exactly on time." The Kitchen Sisters, Davia Nelson and Nikki Silva, went to Tennessee in search of this sound, and they came back with a collection of stories from Nashville that they call the Pan American Blues.
WSM presents a unique broadcast each afternoon at 8 minutes past 5 o'clock when the crack Pan American passenger train passes WSM's radio tower, the tallest in America. The whistle and actual rush of the train are broadcast.
WSM had a broadcasting tower that was located to the south of Nashville. The tower was one of the 8 wonders of the world, one of the tallest freestanding structures in America. And every day, the Pan American, which was one of the great trains of the 30s and 40s, would pass by the WSM tower. Somebody got the idea of putting the WSM microphone out there and letting people hear the passing of the Pan American. People all over the South got to where they would set their watch by that.
Oh, Lord, the Pan American. And it came up on the L&N track from this Louisville, Nashville. That was one of the first remotes in the world, I guess. Every engineer that ever was on the train knew exactly when to hit the whistle, how many times to blow it, and they didn't miss. That was an institution in the South.
My name is Judd Collins. I was a staff announcer at WSM for most of my life. The Pan American feature was included in a program called On the Bandstand. It was one of the rare times when WSM played recorded music, and it went from 5 o'clock to 5:30. During that program, someone at the L&N Railroad would call and say, "The Pan American is on time today," or "The Pan American is running 4 minutes late." He would also give us the name of the engineer. The announcer in the studio would fade the music and say, "We take you now to a point south of Nashville alongside the 878-foot tower of WSM, where a WSM engineer waits with microphone in hand to bring you the actual sound of the L&N's crack passenger train on its way to Birmingham. Here comes the Pan American." As the sound fades, there goes the Pan American. The engineer today is Matt Mowry.
Gosh, the first program I ever heard in my life was on WSM. I'm Sam Phillips of Memphis Recording Service and later on Sun Records. WSM was a station we listened to back then, and it came in just like it was a local. And the ability to hear WSM hundreds, thousands of miles away in so many areas of the country, the southeast, southwest, the northeast, people grew up by it. I mean, they depended on it for everything. I mean, it was just a way of life.
Congratulations, you got very, very close there.
Now it was usually on when we were up getting ready to go to school.
We like to give you a beautiful camera.
In the daytime, Mama had the soap operas on. There was a noon program. I remember my daddy used to come in from the field and catch it, that told about what grain and cotton is selling for and this
it's
sort of thing.
Noontime, neighbors.
Listen for this sound.
WSM, the National Life and Accident Insurance Company, Nashville, Tennessee.
My name is Kyle Cantrell. I'm one of the announcers for the Grand Ole Opry, and I am the operations manager for WSM Radio. There was a company here in town called the National Life and Accident Insurance Company, headed by C.A. Craig, and he had a son named Edwin. One of Edwin's interests in the early days of the 20th century was radio. And he successfully convinced the board of directors that the company needed a radio station and got a license to go on the air on October 5th, 1925. I liken it today to technologically savvy people convincing their companies that they needed websites. Companies back then didn't really know what to do with radio stations.
Say, partner, is that the National Life and Accident Insurance Company station?
Yep. Way down.
In Chicago, the Sears and Roebuck Company had put WLS on the air, which stands for World's Largest Store.
WLS Chicago, the Sears Roebuck station. The WLS show boats the floating palace of wonder.
WGN in Chicago, run by the Tribune. The WGN stands for World's Greatest Newspaper. WSM, the company's motto was, "We Shield Millions." They referred to their sales force as "Your Shield Men." And so the station had to be called WSM.
From Nashville, Tennessee, Prince Albert, the world's most popular smoking tobacco, brings you the South's most popular program, the Grand Ole Opry.
Got my sunny shoes on, got my hair slicked down, having a big time tonight.
The solemn old judge, the originator of the Grand Ole Opry. Judge, suppose you tell us how the Grand Ole Opry came into being.
Well, Louis, our station WSM was opened in the fall of 1925, and it occurred to me at that time that we had a wealth of talent down here in the hills of Tennessee and Kentucky, folk music, and I thought we better try it. So I asked one old man, Uncle Jimmy Thompson, aged 83, to bring his trusty fiddle up here.
I'm going to play you one of our old-timey pieces that I learned knew before the Civil War. Oh, it's a good one. It just gets down in people's heels and they can't keep from dancing. They have to dance on it.
Now, Uncle Jimmy Thompson played a solid hour. That was our first performance of the Grand Ole Opry. And in about 3 months, we had a cast of about 25 or 30 people.
By the end of the year, based on the strength of that one program, Hay had decided to build a regular Saturday night show around old-time rural music. And Hay's name for it was the WSM Barn Dance.
And now, friends, here is George Hay, the solemn old judge, our master of ceremony.
Thank you, David. Thank you. And hello, everybody. Here we are with our show. The Grand Ole Opry House is packed, and we're ready to start the shindig. Roy Acuff and his Smoky Mountain Boys lead off with that good old breakdown. Ida Red, let her go, Roy.
George Hay was such a personality. I mean, it was almost as if this man had invited you into his home to introduce you to his friends. A lot of people like to characterize George D. Hay as an announcer. Well, he wasn't an announcer. George Hay was the star of the show. He was our version of Ed Sullivan.
Uncle Dave making the Dixie Doodrop with his plug hat, gold teeth, chin whiskers. It's all right, Uncle Dave. It's all right.
George Hay, he is the one, more than anyone else, who would define the direction of the station. When he inherited WSM, it was a mixture of lectures and sermons and highbrow music.
This is the air castle of the South.
Hay's contribution was to emphasize the rural Southern culture.
Let it go.
Hello, everybody. I'm Judd Collins. Welcome to the Grand Ole Opry. I was a staff announcer at WSM for most of my life. When I came to Nashville in 1940, nobody wanted to work the Opry at that time. It was bad news. It was hillbilly, and later we called it country, but being the newest member of the staff, I was named to go over to the Opry and make station breaks and introduce the acts and whatever. We liked the Benny Goodman, Tommy Dorsey, Guy Lombardo, Francis Craig stuff, and not the country music. But we learned to like it and learned to live with it very well, because it was what the people wanted to hear.
There's always been a stigma attached to country music. Nashville, Tennessee in 1925 was a small southern city without a whole lot going for it. It was the capital of its state. That's about it. It liked to think of itself in much greater cultural terms than might have really been here. It called itself the Athens of the South. because of the number of colleges and universities.
From the heart of the South, ladies and gentlemen, WSM presents the music of Francis Craig and his orchestra.
There was a distinct blue blood culture to the city. It's part of that wanting to be more than we were that caused us to maintain this replica of the Parthenon in Centennial Park, which is a beautiful structure.
Thank you, boys. And now, friends, we introduce our little mascot, D. Ford Bailey, with his harmonica. And he's got those choo-choo blues.
Judge, how did the Grand Ole Opry get its name?
About 20 years ago, soon after we started the show, and we were immediately preceded by a program presenting the classics under the direction of the famous conductor, Dr. Walter Damrosch of New York City.
The show that Judge Hay had started was the Barn Dance. It was not called the Grand Ole Opry. And according to Judge Hay, D. Ford Bailey's music actually inspired the naming of the Opry itself.
I'm Charles Wolfe. My most recent book is called A Good-Natured Riot, The Early Days of the Grand Ole Opry. Judge Hay asked D. Ford, can you come in and be ready to play a couple of tunes? They were picking up the NBC broadcast, Dr. Walter Damrosch's Musical Appreciation Hour. Dr. Damrosch had been performing a new composition by a guy named Honegger that depicted the onrush of a locomotive, a modern classical piece. And so D. Ford was standing by. And he asked the judge, what do you want me to play? Judge Hay said, well, look, you know, do another train song, why don't we? One of D. Ford's most popular pieces was an imitation of the Pan American, the famous train that came through Nashville every day at 5 o'clock. As D. Ford got ready to play, Judge Hay said, for the past hour, you've been listening to Grand Opera, and now we're going to listen to D. Ford Bailey, and we're going to hear some Grand Old Opry. And D. Ford played the Pan American blues.
Mighty fine, Oscar Stone and all the Possum Hunters. And now, friends, we introduce our mascot on the Grand Ole Opry, little D. Ford Bailey, with his red hot harmonica. The tune is his interpretation of a Tennessee fox chase. All right, D. Ford.
Take it. Yeah.
D. Ford Bailey is this wonderful, legendary, mysterious figure. By 1928, he was on the show more often than any other single person.
He started playing the harmonica when he was 3 years old. He suffered through a very serious bout with polio, and he was laid up in bed for nearly a year. His mother and father gave him a harmonica to play with while he's lying there in bed, and even at 3 years of age, I mean, he heard music in everything around him. The wind, thunderstorms.
The mules, the chickens, he would hear the train. At night, he could hear the foxhounds running in the woods. And he had this uncanny ability to incorporate these sounds into his harmonica music.
The dog would be chasing the fox. He'd tell the dog, chicken, catch it, whoa, wow. Then he would make the sound with his mouth and play the harmonica at the same time. And my name is Christine Bailey Craig. Daddy, a lot of people didn't know he was black. It just didn't dawn on them on the radio that that was a black person on the Grand Ole Opry. Because they knew it was all white cast. I remember Minnie Pearl and Daddy playing. They would wake me up when he was on the radio because it wouldn't come on until 10 o'clock at night, every Saturday night.
I'm going to holler at the chicken. Like he's getting away from you. I'm going to come out.
D. Ford Bailey actually started not on WSM radio. There was an earlier radio station upstairs above an auto parts place. It was called WDAD. D. Ford would go there to buy parts for his bicycle. He never rode a car, and he fixed it up with all sorts of fancy things. Blinking lights, red, green, yellow.
many people with a case of polio that severe would have died. He survived, but it left him crippled and small. He was, even as a grown man, was not more than about 4.5 feet. I'm Charles Wolfe. I've spent a lot of my time talking to older members of the Grand Ole Opry. Dee Ford told me that he had grown up listening to black hillbilly music. His grandfather was a champion fiddler of Tennessee.
And now, a couple of artist service announcements. Roy Acuff and his Smoky Mountain Boys will appear in Flemington, Alabama on Monday, January 15th at the high school. They'll be in Robertsdale, Alabama on Tuesday the 16th at
he
the high
traveled
school.
Along with Bruce the opera stars, Uncle Dave Makers, Roy Acuff, and Bill Monroe. Roy Acuff said, I was not known. I took D4 everywhere I went. He drew the crowd for me. He was one of the main attractions of the show.
It was incredibly difficult for Dee Ford Bailey to travel around the South. My name is David Morton. I did a biography about Dee Ford Bailey. In the 20s and 30s, I mean, it was actually against the law in most of these states to house people of both races in the same hotel. He ended up having to sleep in the car many, many nights. He carried an old army blanket with him just so he could keep warm. There were people that he was extremely close to on the Opry. Uncle Dave Macon, he looked after Dee Ford. He would bring the back seat out of his car into his hotel room and tell the hotel that Dee Ford was his valet so he could get him in the room.
When Dee Ford was a major star on the Opry, the only black musicians who were on the airwaves in 1928 were the big band leaders like Duke Ellington and Cab Calloway and Louis Armstrong, who were all basically approaching it from a jazz point of view.
There was a licensing battle that was going on between ASCAP and BMI in 1940-41 that caught Dee Ford in a way that really made it difficult for him to play the tunes he had been playing for 16 years. ASCAP was claiming that any tunes that was licensed to them could not be played on the radio without having to pay these fees.
The radio stations and the people who ran WSM fought ASCAP by organizing a rival organization, BMI.
When you see me, honey, get love again.
They went to Dee Ford and said, Dee Ford, you can't do John Henry, and you can't do the Fox Chase, and you can't do Ice Water Blues, because those are all ASCAP songs. You'll have to come up with some new songs. And Dee Ford never understood this. These were all, to him, folk songs. The word went out that Dee Ford wouldn't learn any new songs, so he was fired. And he left the Opry in 1941. And he was very bitter. And he dropped totally out of music. He played a little music at his shoeshine stand.
Are you ready? Shoeshine boy.
D4 Bailey Shoe Shop was at 12th Avenue South and Edge Hill Avenue. My name is Silas Tyrone Newsom. Back in 1958, I was a young kid in high school. I went to D4 Bailey and asked him, you know, could I learn how to shine shoes? And every day he come to work with a tie on, a suit, a hat. He was always dapper. Every once in a while, I guess when he got the urge, you know, he would get up and play his harmonica, play his guitar, you know. He very seldom talked about the Grand Ole Opry and what he did years ago. After we found out D4 Bailey had been the first black on the Grand Ole Opry, and he hadn't been nominated to the Country Music Hall of Fame, well, I submitted a letter to the Tennessee Historical Commission requesting that a monument be placed in the area where he had once lived and worked. They decided to go ahead and do it. I figured he would, if he'd been living today, he'd been proud of that.
We actually set up the first old-timer show of the Grand Ole Opry in February 1974 to get Dee Ford Bailey back on the Opry for a special show.
We're very proud to have with us tonight one of the few real Grand Ole Opry pioneers. The fact is, this man was on the Grand Ole Opry the night it got its name. Here's Dee Ford Bailey with the Fox Chase.
The Opry this year is 75 years old. It's the world's longest running radio show. The Opry today is like a giant panorama the entire development of country music. There was nobody who felt more strongly about the history and the tradition of the music than Dee Ford did. Judge Hay, the man that founded the Grand Ole Opry, used to advise all of his performers, keep it down to earth, boys. Keep in touch with your roots.
This is George Hay, the solemn old judge, speaking. Now it's time for the tall pines to pine, the pawpaws to pause, and the bumblebees to bumble all around. The grasshopper hops and the eavesdropper drops, while gently the old cow slips away. Good night and good luck, everybody.
That story produced by the Kitchen Sisters, Nikki Silva and Davia Nelson, with Laura Folger. The Italian